Here we go.
All right. I want to welcome you all. Thank you for being here. Actually, you're not here, but you're there, wherever there is. But thank you for being there in that case. The way this is going to work is I'm going to talk for a few minutes, like 10 or 15. And then there'll be an opportunity for questions, which I hope, well, I expect you'll have many of. And down at the bottom of your screen, there's a place to button to raise your hand, and David will monitor that sort of thing and call on you. We'll do our best to answer. Okay, the Broadband Committee has been working since the spring to figure out the best solution to our internet problems. I'd like to recognize them. Maybe you don't know all of them. Maybe raise your hand with, you know, Richard Hackle, David Hill, Adam Kagan, Hugh Kellum, Gary Oderda, and a non-member but very active guest who isn't really actually on the panel, Phil Trainer. I'd also like to recognize our guests tonight, Mark Ouellette, who I think is the president of Axiom Technologies. Hi, Mark. And Kendra Jo Brindle, who is a senior technical person for the Island Institute. Okay, welcome all. Thank you for coming. My first connection to the internet back in 1985, before most of you were born, was what's called an acoustic coupler. You dialed a number, put the phone in a cradle, it went beep, 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 and you were connected to the internet at the blinding speed of 300 bits per second. The designer of the modem kit that I use wrote that a 300 bits modem can neatly serve most needs for everyday data communication. Well, I guess that was true then, but not now. I want to interrupt myself here just for a minute. Raise the question of speeds. 300 bits per second, 6 megabits, mega just means million. What do these numbers really mean? The answer is they're just a way of describing the size of the pipe that your data goes through. Think of water. One person could get enough to drink through a soda straw, right? But if you try to supply a whole house through that straw, it's just not going to work. You need a bigger pipe. And that's what anyone needs now, a bigger pipe than we needed in 1985. Now, the main reason I'm bringing this old modem up is that nobody had any idea back then that the internet would develop the way it has. There was no web, no remote classes, or maybe by closed circuit television, and no Zoom. And that's where we are now too. We can't know where the internet will go next. Any technology anyone has ever invented has ended up being used for many more things than anybody really thought it was going to be for. But what we do know is there are problems now, let alone the future. And the pandemic has highlighted some of them for us. We've all been to Zoom meetings where one or more people's voices broke up, somebody locked up, froze, had to get out and come back in. People are discovering it's hard to work from home, and remote school work doesn't work for some people. These problems are all because the pipes are too small, and especially the pipe in the upward or sending direction. Even in the receiving direction, the pipe is pretty small. A large file, some of my map files, you know, I work on the maps, can take 2 to 3 hours to download. And I know someone on the island who does consulting work for international organizations who has had to turn down jobs because not being able to handle large data sets. And speeds aren't equal around the island. We're all paying about the same amount, more or less, for our internet connections. But some people are getting 6 megabits per second for downloading, which is not too bad, just for browsing the web. Others are only getting 10% of that for the same price. That's not right. Now, I know I said we can't know where the internet is going next, how it'll affect our lives, but we can get glimpses of the future. Working from home. The people who switched to working remotely during the pandemic are not all going to go back to work 5 days a week, 9 to 5 in the office. We've discovered that lots of work can be done remotely, and for an island, that's particularly important. Not too many people are really fond of the early morning commute. Telemedicine is getting bigger. Zoom visits with doctors and nurses, for sure, but also remote monitoring. Things like blood pressure, blood sugar, just name two. And if a sick person can get checked on without getting on the boat or going to the mainland, especially in bad weather, that's a good thing. Classes, regular school, but also professional training for all kinds of professions, and the continuing education classes professional people need to keep their licenses current. All of these things need a bigger pipe than we have now. Our copper DSL lines were never meant for this kind of service when they were new, and they're getting old. No one's talking about running new ones. So we need a bigger pipe. Okay, where do we get it? Some people have gone for satellite systems like Starlink, Hughes. This is fine if it works for you, but Hughes has turned out to be very weather dependent. And Starlink requires a clear view of the sky down to 25 degrees from the horizon. 25 degrees. This is a 30 degree triangle. I'm afraid they don't make 25 degree triangles. But a 25 degree triangle has the property that this distance is twice this distance. Okay? So if you have a tree, the Starlink unit has to be twice its height away from it. Then you turn it around. And the same thing's true on the other side. And all around, they want a cone 25 degrees from the horizon. People on the shore have an automatic advantage here, of course. For houses close together, there's no way it would work. And it's quite expensive. $500 plus shipping for the unit, $100 a month. So that's not an answer. That's not an answer for the island. In cities, companies build the networks, copper, fiber, whatever. And we as individuals simply buy the service. If we don't like Verizon, we switch to Comcast or vice versa. Last I looked, though, companies were not lining up to build networks of any kind on Shebae or any other islands. People are too spread out. There are too few of them. We all know we don't even have regular cable like the rest of the world. Well, maybe that's just as well. It was in the news recently that the fourth largest cable company in the U.S. is cutting its internet speeds, particularly up by something like 85%. Not for any technical reason. They've got the ability. Just because it can. No competition, they can do whatever they want. Partly in response, lots of towns in the US are going to some kind of community broadband network. Some places are operating their own networks, especially places that already maybe have a rural electric authority. But the best for us, we think, is a partnership. We contract with a partner company to build, operate, and maintain the system, somewhat as though we were leasing it to them, although that's not the real structure. Once the system is built, operating it, unlike building, it is a competitive marketplace. There are even several companies here in Maine actively doing that. But then the question, how big a pipeline do we need? That's the question we started with. We maybe know what we need now, but what will we need in the future? The state is saying, let's build something now that would be good for the next 30, 40 years. We only want to build it once. But they're advising, and have made as their criterion for grants, there's a minimum speed capability of 100 megabits per second, both down and up. The most future-proof way to get these speeds, is through a fiber optic network that can be made faster simply by upgrading the electronics at each end. Fiber optic cables move data at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. That's basically instantaneous, as far as we're concerned. Our solution follows the state's recommendations, and it's a really good deal. It's paid for entirely by subscribers. There is no further cost to taxpayers. So if you're not interested, you just don't sign up for it and don't have to pay for it. Under our plan, the town provides the capital through grants and a bond, and owns the system. Axiom builds it and operates it under contract, paying the town every year enough to pay the debt service on the bond. The system will be capable of blinding speeds, 1 gigabit, 1,000 megabits per second, but the basic service level will be 50 up, 50 down, equal speeds down and up, and cost about $60 a month. Since summer folk are an important part of our community, we pushed hard for a good accommodation for them. What we ended up with is they will pay $20 a month in the off season, which is essentially the individual subscribers' share of the cost of building the system. Now, I have to warn you, there are numbers coming. Some people love numbers, but some people's eyes glaze over. I'm going to share my screen if I can figure out how you get it right, and then put some numbers up here for you to look at. Okay, the total cost of the network to build a system is estimated.
Your screen is not shared.
It's not?
No, it's okay. Not.
And then something's, what it shows me, select the window application that you want to share. PowerPoint, there we are.
There you go.
Okay. Are you good now? Okay. The total cost to build the system is $1,340,250. All right. We can reasonably expect $500,000 to $600,000 in grants for a lot of possible sources. This leaves a bond somewhere between $750,000 and $850,000. That's a big number, but it will be paid off over 20 years out of the subscriber fees. And Axiom guarantees that payment, even if there aren't enough subscribers, which is pretty unlikely. We're proposing 3 or potentially even 4 service levels. The basic service level is 50 down, 50 up, which is a much bigger pipe than we have now and probably enough for most households. The next level up is 100 over 100. It's a very much bigger pipe. It's good for huge files or watching several different videos at the same time. A huge pipe is 500 over 500. This is a bigger pipe than most people have ever experienced. Maybe the Ian wants that. I don't know. Now, these are levels that are set electronically. The system is capable of even higher levels than this, up to a gigabyte. So any service level can be upgraded. So we really don't have to sweat which level decision. It's not a big deal what you choose in the first place. User costs. The basic level, 50-50, would be $59.99. 100 over 100, $79.99. And 500 over 500, $109.99. And at all levels, these only apply in the on-season for seasonal residents. There's a $20 line charge in a 6-month off-season. Okay, is that clear, I guess? There's no hookup charge to anybody if you subscribe in the initial construction phase. No hookup fees, no nothing. Okay, now I'm going to get out of here. And go back to where we were. The installation includes the equivalent of a modem. In fiber networks, it's called an optical network terminator, or ONT. Now you know an in term. This is the device that changes things from a light signal to an electrical signal. But you will need a router and or a Wi-Fi access point. This can be rented from Axiom, or you can buy your own. They're not expensive. The router I bought years ago when ShebigNet first started still works fine. Once the system is up and running, Axiom will do the maintenance. They will keep a bucket truck on the island and have committed to have an on-island technician, even after David and Beverly retire. Okay, timeline about for this. Everything's a little confused right now by the new main connectivity authority, which is taking its time getting up to speed. A grant application window is expected to open in late November. The target for awarding those grants, though, is February and March of next year. Construction, including permits, et cetera, take about a year. So spring, summer of 2023 is probably the best we can hope for as an operational date. Now that's a long time away, but it'll be a lot longer if we don't start now. For that timeline to work, the selectmen need the authority to issue the bond. And we need that authority before we can apply for any grants. The committee hopes that they will decide to put this on the warrant for a town meeting in the very near future. Now, last thing, if we don't act now, two things will happen. One, the federal money will go away. There's not enough of it for everyone now, and other towns will just grab it. Two, frustrated individuals will work out their own solutions. Some will go with Starlink, which is fine if you've got the means and the situation, the space to do it. Others, particularly where there are several houses close together to share the cost, will work out their own fiber deal. Either of these will give us a future of haves and have-nots. We won't have a community system. We'll have some people who do it, and some people who get it, and some people don't. And that will be a big divide in the community, and that would be very sad. And that's the end of what I want to say. Mark, you have anything you think we should add? Mark? Okay. Maybe you'd answer the questions as they come up if they're for you. Yep. Okay, then we can take questions, I guess, David.
Yeah. If you have a question, okay, good. Mike Grunko has a question. I'm going to allow Mike to talk. And you may speak, Mike.
Good evening. We've just closed for the winter. What additional costs would be taxes? You said a rental. I mean, one of the things that sort of burns me is that Axiom gives me this teeny little modem that I can't buy anywhere and charges me, what, $8 a month for it. I would just interested in finding out not what I get for $60, but what I don't get for the $60.
Okay. Mark, you want to answer that?
Sure. We're happy not to rent you a router. And every individual is allowed and encouraged to go buy their own router at Best Buy or Amazon or whatever you would like that makes better sense for your own situation. Certainly our routers are not sized currently for every situation and for every home, and every home's configuration is a little bit different. And depending on the size and the number of walls and where it's located, it cannot perform as well as other modems, other routers that you might be able to get into the marketplace. So you certainly have the ability to do that. And we're not asking you to take, you're not required to lease a router from us, which would be $7.50 a month in the new system.
Now, I would add to that you can pay, if you want to, you can pay $500 for a router if you're a determined video gamer, and that's important to you. But you can also get one for $40 that would, for most people, would work just as well.
Okay, are there specs for that that I need to get, or is it just get a router that's for my capacity?
There are specs that we would ask you to consider, not because we care, but because I think we can give you some good thinking on what you would be looking for. For example, I'll just give one example from a technical perspective. It's very simple. You want dual banded, so you want to be able to broadcast in multiple bands that provide one of the bands provides better penetration through walls. The other provides more speed in line of sight. So those are the kinds of things that we're happy to answer questions for on the phone. We can do that for you now if you'd like.
Okay, I can contact your tech person.
And yeah.
They've all been been very helpful, by the way. I just want you to know. Please.
Thank you.
It's also true that really any router will basically do the job that's available on the market now. That you, it, what comes out of the optical network terminator, the ONT, is Ethernet. And any router can take an Ethernet input.
Grunko asked about the impact on taxes. Just mentioned.
Of taxes on the, Mark, are the taxes on that $59?
No, there are no taxes. It's an unregulated utility. So the price that you put up, Michael, is the price that people will pay.
Okay, that's what. So
there's two. Yeah, and I'll just mention going on to Michael's just one additional point, which is, yes, you can lease a router from us, but you're not required. That's an additional cost if you would like to do that. Perfectly fine if you don't. The second is that if you are looking for phone, a voice over IP over your internet, that is a charge. And we typically charge between $24.99 and $29.99, depending on what the situation is. I think we've said to the committee $24.99. If that's the case, that's what we'll charge. It's basically a pass-through. For a system that's unlimited local and long distance continental US, no international calling, and no additional fees on top or taxes on top of the $24.99. That's the one charge in if you'd like to take phone from us. We'd prefer that you don't take phone from us. Please don't. There are cheaper models out there, and you can do it for free over your cell phone on your fiber connection once you get it. So you don't need us to have a very reliable phone system. And there are a number of them on the marketplace. UMA, there are a number of them, Magic Jack, that can provide telephone service for you less expensively than us. We offer it because some people like the comfort of that, and we're certainly able to provide it, but there are other options.
Thank you. Who's next?
Toby Webb. Toby, I'm going to allow you to talk. Go ahead, Toby.
Hi, Toby.
Okay, hi. In prior proposals, the drop was going to still belong to Axiom. And now if there's no charge for the drop because it's being done as part of the initial construction, will that be the towns or Axiom's?
The whole thing is the towns. The drop, the equipment in your house up to the ONT will belong to the town.
Thank you.
And just to be clear, Toby, we never had any proposal in which we would own the drops. What we said to the town is we would service those drops on our dime. And that is still the case today in this latest proposal. We will service those with Axiom's own money, well, our own internally as part of our expense lines, just to be super clear on that. We were never in the business of owning the system. We like municipally owned systems. That's what we've proposed to the town. That's what we've always proposed.
Yep, David?
Yeah, Mark, could you talk a little bit about some of the other towns you've worked in and how those systems have evolved?
I'm sorry, I keep muting and unmuting, trying to be gracious. I apologize.
Question is, can you talk about other towns?
So right now we are built on and operating for our second year on Cliff Island. And many of you have spoken with the Cliff Island folks who we worked with there. And if you haven't, I can still provide that connection over to Walt Swift over on that island. We built and operate a network there in which we pay quarterly payments through subscriber revenues back to the town, back to the Cliff Island Association, just as we would here. Cranberry Isles, we've been on for several years now. and we have the exact same model that we have proposed here with them, in which we provide quarterly payments back to the town based on subscriber revenues. So both of those things are being in operation now. And then this year, we are building in Georgetown, or we haven't started yet, but we're going through the pole licensing now in Georgetown under this model. That's about 1,000 homes passed. And that's been a contract that's been signed. Southport, also contract signed, working through this exact same model with Southport. And we're on the cusp of signing with Searsport. I've got a lot of S's going. I've also got Somerville, and I confuse the three of them because there are a lot of S's going on. But anyway, those are all moving forward. Town of Washington, Isla Ho. There are a number that are working through the process. There are more than that, but are working through the process. But those are all municipally owned, all equipment, all assets, all materials, all owned by the town, with Axiom operating under a long-term contract, 12 or 15 years in all of those cases, mostly 12 years. That's our typical contract, with kick-out clauses every three if we're not performing. So all of those projects are evolving and moving forward over the next, let's call it, year or so. We're set to essentially add another 1,000 customers over the next year in those other communities that I mentioned.
Michael, I have three people who have questions. I'd like to start with Brian. If Brian is asking about final run, pole to house, overhead or buried, fiber or copper from pole. I think what he's asking, Mark, basically is to describe the infrastructure of the system.
So fiber all the way to your home, into your home. What Michael was describing was the ONT and the conversion from the fiber to an Ethernet cable that would provide service. At that short distance, you would still get exactly the same fiber speed that we provide to the outside of your house. And so it is all fiber all the way into your home, and then it gets converted through that ONT. It will come to you via your nearest telephone pole. So if you have a telephone pole that serves you with electricity, that's how you will get your fiber. It will run essentially along the same way. If you do not have a telephone pole, or you have buried utilities, and you have an open conduit that would allow us to run a fiber line through it, we will do that for you for free, just like we would for from the nearest telephone pole. If you do not have a conduit, then we will need to speak with you about how we would lay that fiber to your house and what would be the most convenient way to do it. And there may be, although it's not clear yet, because we're not, we haven't been, I don't know if you've accepted the RFP. It hasn't been a vote yet. So I don't want to presume anything, because there's still some details that would need to be worked out if, in fact, you don't have either of those two options. And then our simple option is to lay it on the ground. That's what we've done in a variety of other situations on a multiple islands that we've worked on, but sometimes that's not particularly comfortable for a homeowner either. And so we'd have to think about and work with you individually to figure out how we'd get you that fiber run to your home, but it would be fiber.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to go to Michael McKee or Makey. I don't know how to pronounce your name. I apologize, but go ahead and speak if you would like to.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much. My wife, Katie, our family just moved on island. This is our fifth night, and we are going to be year-round residents.
Oh, good. Welcome.
Yeah. Welcome.
Great. I appreciate the work of the broadband committee. So we're building down on Cottage Road. And so that last bit of information was really good. We haven't put in our underground cables yet to power, but if we run a separate conduit and just leave it empty, I think that would be perfect.
Perfect.
Okay. That was really my question. I mean, I'm all for it. Let's get going. I think I'll register to vote tomorrow.
Great. Let's do that.
All right. Thank you. Coming back to the online questions, let's see. Jim Van Fleet says, given the ramped up activity enjoyed by your company, how long would the build out take? Minimum, maximum timetable?
It's likely to take 12 to 14 months, with the construction part of that process taking 2 to 4 months. So it won't take that long. Once we get the pole licensing process completed, the problem is the pole licensing process is out of our hands and requires somewhere in the 6 to 8 month range to complete.
Yeah. So there's a lot of uncertainty around that. How is the, if I can ask a question now, how are negotiations going with the utilities as far as pole attachments?
Lovely. They've never been better. Do you hear my hint of sarcasm in there?
Yes, I do.
It's been a challenge. It's been a challenge. And there is a process expressed through law that the providers, in this case, it would be the utility, CMP, and Consolidated, who is the pole licensee for the state of Maine. Both processes are challenging and take a good long time. And I would expect your process to be no less time consuming. So I would expect 6 to 8 months to get through the pole licensing process. It will get done. They are required to get it done, but it's not particularly transparent. And it's certainly not particularly speedy, and it's also expensive. So the questions we'll see how that process goes. Consolidated has made some option to potentially speed the process by using third-party contractors. And we are testing this model in Georgetown with about half of the applications. Georgetown has about 1,000 homes passed and a significant number of poles more than you do. And we've put in half the applications under the what we call the old system and half under the new system. So we're going to see if the new system actually produces results in a more timely manner. And that's really the complicating part. The second, I guess I'd say one other point to building, which is what we would try to do if we had approval to move forward, is we would almost immediately try to line up our construction partner and get ourselves lined up for a construction date so that we could seamlessly move through the pole licensing and then immediately go to construction without much of a delay. But that's going to require some things on behalf of the town and behalf of Axiom and behalf of the constructor to work together to ensure that it can happen very smoothly over time.
Thank you. Let me apologize in advance. I've got several questions coming in. I'm not sure if I'm answering them in the order that they come. So let me just proceed. Eliza Jane Adams is asking, whoops, it just slid away from me. Eliza Jane Adams is asking, how many potential customer accounts are on the island? And Michael, I think maybe you're best suited for that one.
Yeah, I can answer that. There's approximately, there are 490 something E911 addresses on the island. There are probably 400 and somewhere between 450 and 475 households. And they're all potential customers. Some of them may choose not to sign up, but the fiber is going to go down all the roads, in a sense, by all those addresses. I don't know if that answers the question or not, Eliza Jane.
I think, well, Mark, you can tell us how many Axiom customers are here on the island now, and how many do you anticipate per the application that you've made?
We're suggesting that we believe we can easily reach 300 subscribers because we have somewhere approximately around 225 to 240 customers right now in our current system. So we would convert those customers to fiber optics, the current customers, and then take requests for service from others beyond that.
And if I might, of those 200, 230, however many you have now, what if they don't want 100 megabytes over 100 megabytes? What if they're happy with 6 megabits? What do we do for them?
Well, this was a question by the committee, and we did offer to keep people on their current plan that they are getting now at their current price.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Richard Hackle now and find out what Richard would like to know.
Yes, thanks, Dave. It was mentioned that that the town, through all this installation, that the town would own the fiber network. And maybe that went past some people's ears, but I just wanted to see if anybody else on the panel could explain why we thought that's a good idea. Maybe even Kendra Joe can address that, why sort of around Maine, we're looking at the small communities, why the benefit of the town owning the fiber over the company owning the fiber. Why is that such a good idea?
I could speak to that, or Kendra Joe, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So, I mean, I think of this in a couple of ways. Some of the smallest communities in Maine are the ones that in 20 years of cable providers providing what seemed to be adequate service to Maine, still haven't gotten to, right? The premise density isn't there, the population isn't there to say it's worth building out the infrastructure. And small towns in Maine have gotten tired of it. I think it's really started with our islands. They've led the charge when it comes to broadband action and particularly municipal ownership. And the reason why municipal ownership usually rises to the top for some communities is all about money. The way a lot of communities look at it is, if you're gonna put money, taxpayer dollars into it, even for the upfront capital costs, knowing that with the right amount of subscribers, you'll be able to make that money back. They want to own something. They want to have a say in the outcome. For a lot of communities on the mainland, you know, as they kind of go down their path, even if they end up with a private public partnership with an incumbent provider, you know, maybe they don't own it, maybe they have a quasi ownership where a portion of it is owned by the town, a portion is owned by the provider. It still gets down to, for decades, communities have just sat back and said, this is what we have. And now if they're gonna put in the time and the capacity and the money at the end of the day into a system, that's going to be future forward and scale up to meet their demand, then they do want to have a seat at the table and some control. And for a lot of communities, municipal ownership has worked. In Maine, municipal ownership works because it's a home rule state. So the town has the authority to take on infrastructure like this. Connect Maine Authority over the last 5+ years has really shifted their thinking around communities' involvement. And instead of it just being a nice to have, if community is in agreeance to what the provider's doing, it's really become a requirement for communities to have a say and to have some support of the systems that are at least getting funded by state money. So that's just the way broadband has shifted in Maine, to where even if it's not municipal ownership, there has to be some community input in this process to access funds like that. And at the end of the day, for me, what I see in the conversations I have, it really gets down to that. If we're gonna use taxpayer dollars, we wanna have a say, we wanna have some control. We don't wanna keep in this cycle that we've been in for the last couple of decades.
Thank you
Kendra Joe. Next question is from Gretchen Tonks-Hartling. It was actually answered earlier, but she may not have been online. So let me just ask the question. Seasonal rates, is there a plan for seasonal rates? Currently with Consolidated, we can get a seasonal rate as long as we commit to a certain number of months at the full rate. I think our prior allowance with Axiom was 6 months full rate, then 6 months seasonal rates. Mark, could you just repeat your answer quickly for Gretchen on that, if she wasn't online earlier?
Actually, I'll just repeat what I said in the initial presentation.
Okay.
Which is basically that we have negotiated with Mark a seasonal rate for summer people. It's 6 months. The on-season is sort of coincides with actually how a lot of people open their cottages from May to through October. And the in the off-season, the rate drops to $20, which is essentially any given subscriber's share of what it costs to build the network. So the money that $20 is actually going straight, goes to Axiom, goes straight to the town. Because that's, and it seemed to us fair from that point of view, even though it's more than what people are paying now under, certainly under ShebigNet and then Axiom, but it seemed to be reasonable that everybody should pay their the same share as far as constructing the network went.
Now, Clay Hawks came on a little bit earlier and had some questions. And so, whoops, he just disappeared. I hope we didn't lose Clay. Here he is. Okay. Let me allow Clay to talk if I can. Clay, can you say something? Okay, this is odd. I see Clay's hand up, but I'm not able to allow him to talk. Okay, here we go. Here we go.
Okay.
There you are. Go ahead, Clay.
Hey now. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, yeah. We can.
Excellent. Thank you. First of all, thanks for your great work, members of the committee. And I think it's a phenomenal idea, getting fiber out to the island. I've argued for a while that broadband access should be a utility, and this is a step in the right direction. I've got a couple of technical questions about the actual fiber delivery to the island. I don't know if that's Mark or not. My question is, what's the total bandwidth capability of the link to the island between the mainland and the island? And how is that fiber delivered? Are we taking a gigabit port off of a switch, or is it a node on a DWDM ring, or how is that being managed?
You know too much, Clay.
Hey, Mark, I think that's one for you.
Michael, you need to answer that question. So what we have now will be what will continue, which is a consolidated wholesale undersea cable connection to the mainland. The pass off will come at the clam shack as it does now, and it will be into. I don't know if this is going to answer exactly, because I'm not as technical as my team is. So just to be clear about that, but I would just say it this way: all of the switching will occur. All the switches will be at the head end at the CO, and the system will be a home run system.
Got it.
That will deliver an individual fiber to each home. So does that sort of get to your question, Clay, or do you have feel free, and I will get back to you if I can't answer your question.
No, that's fine. That's good. I guess my thought was, you know, some of the plans that were being offered are pretty stout, you know, the 500 up and down plan. If you get two or three people, you know, businesses or what have you, with that kind of bandwidth requirement, I find it hard to believe that, or hard to imagine what that would be, but you know, it wouldn't, you know, two customers at 500 megs would exhaust a gigabit link.
To the mainland. Yeah. It doesn't quite work that way. I will just say it this way without getting too far into the weeds for this group, but I'm happy to take an offline conversation with you, Clay, frankly, and do more of this, but I'll just say it this way. We are guaranteeing that the megabits per second at each home. So if you pay for 50 over 50, you get 50 over 50, 24/7, 365. And the way we're able to do that, one way is the way I just mentioned, by having everybody having an individual fiber. It's not a shared system. So when we deliver those megabits through wherever you are on the island, nobody's pulling from that bandwidth to you. But the second way we do that is a very sort of complicated mathematical process that helps us understand the megabits per second that we need to deliver to the island to produce that that guaranteed solution for you. And it is not a one-to-one match. Right. It's an 8-to-1 match is what we usually provide, which is about as robust as a provider usually provides. In fact, most providers do not provide that level. That's why we can guarantee the service, because when you have 500 megabits or 100 megs or 50 megs, whatever it is, you're using that amount of bandwidth for a very short period of time. I've had somebody in my office who's a mega user have a gigabit of service at his home, gig over gig, and he's tried to break it several times. He's just not able to achieve that level of use for any sustained period of time that would degrade the connection to you. So I think we're very confident that we'll be able to deliver what we say we're going to do. Not very confident, I know, extremely confident, 100% confident that we will be able to deliver a solution that is much, much more robust than what we have now, and be able to provide for those, 8 to 6 or 8% of people on the island's connections that are going to want to have higher level connections.
Right. No, very exciting. And thank you for those answers. Very illuminating. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. Thank you, Clay. And hope we didn't get into the weeds too much on the technicalities here. Now, here's one that's very straightforward. It's more of a comment than a question, but I'll ask Mark to comment on it. Eric Formasano says, from start to finish, voting, construction, etc., sounds like this might not be something I could use until 2024. Knowing the uncertainties of the timing of Congress and everybody else, not to mention consolidated and make ready, Mark, would you like to comment again on how soon we might expect to move forward?
Well, it really, there are a couple of things that really, that are, depends. And the first is how quickly the town will want to move forward, right? Because until a vote happens and until money is appropriated in whatever way it's going to be appropriated, nothing's going to move forward. So you can take whenever the money is available and add 12 to 14 months to that at minimum. So when you start to think about it that way, your extrapolation of your dates start to push out very quickly as you go month to month and month, and decisions get made over time. So it's really a question for the committee, I think, and then therefore to the select board ultimately. Should they choose to put this on a ballot and have, I don't know if you're going to have a special town meeting, when you're going to do that, et cetera. Those things will all matter. And then if you're going to require you to have grants in and hopefully approved, that your vote is going to have to line up with when the funding sources are available. So for example, if you miss this next funding source, which is looking entirely likely that you are going to in November at the state, there's going to be $6 to $7 million at the state. If you do not make that grant round, then you're going to be looking at next year and where's the funding going to come from. There's going to be money, as Kendra Joe mentioned, or Michael, I can't remember, a significant amount of money, but it's unclear when it's going to be put on the street. So that's really the uncertainty and maybe the urgency that the committee has been trying to express to the board.
Yeah, the money, the state has money now that is available. It's going to hand out in grants. And as far as I'm concerned, it's really important that we make this November deadline. And what that's going to require, one of the things they look for is community support, community commitment. And so in order to even apply for a grant at that time, we will need the vote from a special town meeting at to that gives the selectmen the authority to issue the bond. They don't have to issue it. We don't know what the amount's going to be, but they need the we need the authority to issue it. So I am hopeful that the selectmen will decide on Wednesday night when they meet and we talk to them. I'm delivering a formal report to them on Wednesday night that they will vote then to include this on the warrant on a special town meeting in the very near future. That's the best answer I can give for that.
If I can just reiterate for one second something that Michael just said. Yeah. It's really important for communities to hear that. So it doesn't mean that you vote and then the next day someone goes to the bond bank or the local bank and just takes out money for the full amount. It really just gives the select board the authority to approve a bond up to a certain amount. But that approval with the select board and the opportunity to go and seek funding comes typically after a community exhausts their grant options and moves forward. But that just gets you that foot in the door. It gets you the matches required for state funding or federal funding if you were to go down that path. It gives you the commitment that Michael also talked about of showing that this is not just supported by the community, but the way that a lot of funders see it is if the community were to put forward funding and approve a town vote, it also tells you that those individuals hopefully would also be subscribers on that network, because the last thing the state or the federal government wants to do is give money to a fiber to the premise build that has no subscribers, right? Just a dark fiber network. So with that vote, it sends the signal of, we're here, we understand this is a community, this is a problem that needs a community-wide solution, and we would be taking service in some, you know, some form, not 100% take rate probably, but a good majority would be taking service enough to make this all reliable and a sustainable project. The biggest risk to a municipally owned system is subscriber take rate, having enough to make that system not necessarily profitable, but break even and move forward, as you know, the committee has been outlining tonight. So I just wanted to reiterate that, because it's definitely a point of contention for some communities, especially when people think that you vote and then, you know, that next morning someone's going to the bank and taking out a big sum of money. That's not how it's going to work here.
No,
thank you.
Yeah, all right. We've done that in other issues. So I think the town is, people in town are pretty clear about that. But anyway, David, next question.
Yeah, we've got about eight people on deck. Next is Donna Miller-Damon, who would like to know, will the town have to hire a person to coordinate broadband during construction and beyond? And that's for Mark.
Sorry, mute, unmute. No. I don't believe you would have to do that. I believe strongly you wouldn't have to do that and wouldn't have to expend money. There's been one community who has asked me if I were to hire an independent engineer, the town, hire an independent engineer to check the system once it was built to make sure it was operational at what we had described to the community, how it would be operational. And one community has moved forward and put money into their own budget to do that out of a close to 10 communities now. Ultimately, what we would be doing at Axiom is reporting back to the broadband committee or to the select board as needed, maybe on a set schedule over time, about how many subscribers, what kind of trouble tickets, how often we were down, these kinds of metrics that will all get built into the contract with the community ultimately, so that you can have a pretty good representation of understanding what is going on in the network on a, in a real-time basis, on an ongoing basis. And I don't see the real need. A lot of small towns like to have, like the select board likes to run, likes to not, like they like to be the ones who are overseeing Axiom and therefore the network. So if the town decides to go in a different way from that and hire somebody else or expend money to do that, we'd be happy to work with you. And Kendra Joe knows all of these ins and outs with a lot of the communities that we work with. Also as a neutral party, Island Institute, happy to have that conversation. But we expect to keep continue to have island representation in the form of workers like David and Beverly, or David and Beverly for some period of time, and we're looking at others to transition from them. I think they'd like to retire. I don't know, David. I don't know. Anyway, they'd like. Yeah, we don't know. But you know, we're always going to try to have somebody on the island to represent Axiom and to cut down on the number the time when somebody can respond to an issue. But we also expect that the issues will be much less than they are currently, because fiber optics is that much more reliable, that the system problems are far fewer than what you're experiencing now on a copper-based network.
I won't go into detail, but amen to that. The copper-based is very prone to breaking down. It's 100 years old. You know, Beverly's out there every day when she's not fishing, sometimes when she is fishing. But anyway.
Go ahead. Just an example, and it's not an Axiom community. It's so Islesboro with GWI as the provider on their municipal network, just to give you a little insight into what they maybe did. So they have a small advisory committee. There's a couple of people that were on the original broadband scoping committee. There's always a select board representative. There's also someone from one of the schools, the preschool or the K-12 school there, on this committee. And what they do is similar to kind of what Mark described. They review a lot of those metrics and data they're coming out. How many times were there break fixes? How many times were island? So they have someone on island and they have a bucket truck on island. How many times did that person have to go out and fix an issue? What were those issues? How many times did they have to call someone over from the mainland to address those concerns and outages, et cetera? That committee also surveys all the subscribers. I believe they survey twice a year, and that is their way of getting straight from the customer data to hold GWI, to hold their provider to the contract. So instead of hearing everything from the provider, they also survey the community to identify how the customer service has been, how the system has been operating, their experience, and also what else are they needing, especially around digital literacy and inclusion opportunities. This is now a town-owned infrastructure. So what can the town do to make sure that everyone's utilizing the service to the best of their ability? And another community that does work with Mark, the point person on it isn't the select board, it's the town manager. And there's that kind of gateway path between the town staff and the provider and the select board. I think it all depends on the town's capacity. And as we probably all know, most people wear about 5 hats at least. So it's really up to the select board to identify what kind of capacity is needed to do this. I would honestly say I'm surprised at how little of a lift it is once you really get things up and going. I think the advisory committee on Islesboro, they don't meet every month. They meet every couple of months or even every quarter to have these conversations and just have those check-in points.
Thank you. Now, Kim Hamilton, Focus Maine, says, thank you also so much for your work on this committee. I work from home and connectivity has been limited and frustrating. I'm wondering what grants you think the town can secure and if there is anything we can do to make this process go faster. Letter to our federal delegation, DECD, etc. 2023 seems far away. Again, I'll turn to Mark. Mike, you want to take that?
Yeah, I think so. The Connect Maine has money, as was mentioned. I think there's $6 million was the figure mentioned. And that's what's going to be available at this in this next grant application. In addition, Cumberland County has $56 million in American Rescue Plan money. And broadband is one of the named explicit uses for that money. On things it can be used for. And I would think we would apply to get for a grant from them. That's what to do about getting it, expediting it as a point of view of an individual is something I can't answer yet. But when we get nearer the actual grant application point, maybe we'll become clearer. What can be done. One thing I know that the the next main grants I've asked for in the past is letters from community members, supportive letters, that sort of thing. So there will be things that can be done. I just don't know what they are yet quite.
Right. So now I'd like to go to the hands up and I'll come back to the on screen. Andy Granell, I believe, has had his hand up for a little bit. Andy, I'm going to allow you to talk, and please do so.
Good. Well, thank you. This builds out on the last 20 years. And so I just want to say, Beverly and David, thank you, because this evening it comes clear to me you're really the parents, the grandparents of what's happening here. Second of all, I am just very, very excited. I think the COVID has laid bare that this is a utility. It's as essential and important as any other utility out there. A third point is that if you want young families and people to work at home, to live on that island, you have to have this utility, and it has to work at the speeds that Mark is talking about. Fourth is that those who are disenfranchised, and that's our summer visitors, and I'm one of them, who pay taxes, really need to be tapped to help with this process in whatever way that seems most logical. And I'll just leave it at that. So I'm very excited about this. I think the 12 member corporation that I represent, or all summer visitors, will be saying, yes, let's move ahead as quickly as possible. Just my, finally, thank you. This is just great.
Well, thank you, Andy.
Thank you. Donna, you're next. Go ahead, Donna.
You're muted, Donna. Donna, you're muted.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to follow up on that, the question that I asked before about, you know, the increase of work. I can't see the Board of Selectmen be taking this on. And our town administrator is already overextended. So Kendra Jo used the example of, was it Islesboro that has a committee that does this? And I guess, can you flesh out a little bit more what it is that they are responsible for, and how do they work with the rest of the town?
Sure. So absolutely. And then I'm also happy to connect the select board directly to the select board on Islesboro on that advisory committee if you have further questions. So frankly, they're an advisory committee. There is at least one select board member on at all times, similar to other committees in our towns. But they are tasked with ensuring the management of the system and the partnership with the provider. The provider is doing the maintenance. They're doing the day-to-day management, but they're making sure that contract is being met. So they're kind of that pipeline of information in. They don't negotiate contracts by any means, but they do ask questions, bring up issues, and they are that point, not only between the provider and the select board, but also the provider and the community. So as they hear concerns, that's the door that you go to. You don't go to the select board, you don't go to the town office, you go through this committee to identify your concerns so that they can address that and have those conversations with the provider and adjust or adapt as quickly as they can. You know, I think that that's usually what we expect out of an advisory group to any infrastructure or any project, is just to take some of the load off of the town's plate, off of the select board's plate, and but also at the same time making sure that the select board is as informed as they can be prior to going into contracts. But they've been our point person for any digital equity and inclusion work, any digital literacy work. They do all of that surveying that I mentioned a couple of times a year to make sure that the experience on island is what they set out to do. I mean, they passed a large $1 million bond. They put this infrastructure forward, and they want to make sure that over multiple decades, it is doing exactly what they told the community it would do. So they serve as that entry point between the provider, the community, and the select board.
Yeah.
They do check the systems. Right, I mean, they do inform all of the equipment. Their central office is at the town office. They have access to that. They do make sure that things are up and running. The on-island tech is a part of that committee as well. So, you know, he's able to address concerns as they come up. He does all of the, if he can take care of it, he does, because he's right there on island, trying to avoid having to bring extra people out to the community, knowing that that creates a lot of delay.
I can say that I would be happy to be involved in an operation effort like that as a volunteer. I would not be paid.
So Eliza Jane has a question that I know Mark is going to love to answer. She says, Axiom has many small contracts and seems to be a growing business. Is there a chance that Axiom would be purchased by a much larger company such as Consolidated or Spectrum?
All right, let me be more serious than I was going to be about this answer when he just asked me. The contract with the town will have an explicit part that says if Axiom is sold or Axiom loot comes under a different control mechanism from another company, that the town would have the option to sign on to the new entity under the exact same contract, obviously, or to look for a different provider. So get asked that question not quite as pointedly as you made it about Consolidated or Spectrum, which neither will ever buy us. So just to be clear about that, that's not going to happen. But if another provider, it's hard for me to say what's going to happen 10 or 15 years from now. So I don't believe we've been in business for over 18 years now. We've never been bought by anybody or consolidated in any way. So we don't see that as our future. But that does get addressed in the contract so that the town can have protection should we change hands for whatever reason during the term of the contract.
Yeah, thank you. Next.
There's a question in the chat. I don't know if you want to, or you have people with their hands up that need to be.
Yes, I have people lined up in the chat here. Next is a great question from Jim Van Fleet, because bears repeating. Missed the beginning. Is there a tax rate increase should this be approved? If so, can this be quantified?
And the short answer is no and yes.
Yeah.
There's no tax rate. Yes, it can be quantified. Zero.
Yeah. Just to be completely, we've got $50,000. The town has $50,000 in a reserve account. And the idea is that that would fund the build out during the first year. And after that, the only increase would be perhaps in the second year when as much as $10,000, and that's a high number, might be spent on maintenance of the system. But after year two, it's my understanding, and Mark, please correct me if I'm misstating, there would be no further demands made on the town, that the entire system and its maintenance would be funded by the users of that system.
Yes, correct. The first year funding shortfall is really the interest payments for the bond that would pay for the construction. So there'd be no revenues coming in during that first year while it's constructed, while those monies are expended. I do expect that there is a good opportunity. There are several good opportunities for funding for that first year gap and the second year gap, which is much smaller, less than $10,000. I'm not looking at my chart right in front of me, but something like that. So it's not a particularly large gap over the first couple of years, potentially. And we're believing and hoping that those funding shortfalls will get made up by grant opportunities.
Thank you. Now, next is a question from Betts Mayer. While you have explained this, it still isn't clear about the monthly cost for year-round residents. This is assuming that fiber optic is available to all. Is that true? And what will the monthly cost? What will be the monthly cost? Michael?
Okay. The short answer there is yes, fiber optic will be available to everywhere, to everybody. You don't have to sign up for it, but it's available to you. The monthly cost, the basic monthly cost for year-round residents is $59.99 a month at the basic tier, which is pretty good, much better than we have now. If you need more bandwidth, you can upgrade it to twice the speed, twice the bandwidth, for $79.99 and so on, as I said. But it will be available everywhere on the island. That's the really important bottom line.
Thank you.
And just to put a point on that, Michael, pardon me, David, from Axiom standpoint, the monthly subscription fees of $59.99, $79.99, $109.99, those three basic tiers, you can pay for those. You would get a monthly bill from Axiom, of which you would pay, or you could do that quarterly, semi-annually, or annually for year-round residents also. So you have a variety of ways to pay. You'd also pay just as you are now. You can pay via a credit card you can go online and pay. You can get a monthly paper bill at your home. You can get an electronic bill at your home, at your email. And so we love to take people's money, and we try to create a variety of ways to do that. And so you would be paying a monthly subscription fee, which is the most common, just as you are now, with a monthly bill.
All right. Now, moving on to Lila and Suhail Bisharat. Thank you for all you have done to get us up to this point and for the clarity of your presentation. Now, what can we do to speed the process of bringing everyone on board and getting a town vote to give the selectmen authority to move forward now?
I can answer that very easily.
Please.
We need to encourage the selectmen to put to, at the meeting on Wednesday, to pass a motion to put authority to issue this bond on the warrant for a town meeting in the next 2 or 3 weeks. There are other issues they want to put on a town meeting warrant anyway. So if they just add this to that list, then we'd be in a position to apply for grants in November. And the timeline can be as I outlined it. So I encourage the selectmen to move forward.
Now, Kendra Joe has sent us a message, which is good, because we forgot to mention this. One of the problems that we have is we don't really know what our bandwidth is on the island. We don't know what our speeds are. And Kendra Joe is saying another thing we can do every day to support your community broadband efforts is to take the main state speed test. And the URL is here. mainbroadband.coalition.org. If you go to mainbroadbandcoalition.org, you will see the link for the speed test. And Kendra, if you want to comment some more on that, that'd be great. Oh, directions are on the website, and it's the easiest way to get your user experience registered in the statewide data.
Yeah, I'm happy to comment more. So the state has partnered with the state being Connect Maine Authority, has partnered with the Maine Broadband Coalition and geo partners to put a speed test out. It's been up for almost a year. It'll be up for another year. This is one piece of data that goes into grant making protocol for the state. The first being their soul map, which is all provider driven data. A lot of our committees, this one, as well, has gone onto that map and said, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Right? It's all advertised speeds. So providers say, this is what we know we can offer. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's what they offer, guarantee, or what the user receives. So another data point that the state now takes is this Maine Broadband Coalition speed test. It's your user experience. There are people can point faults in it, but what it does tell us is at any given time, depending on how many speed tests you take throughout the day on your different your laptop, if you have a desktop computer, we do encourage you to not take it on a cell phone. But we ask you to take it at different times of day because your speeds fluctuate at different times of day based on how many users, saturation in your down your road, how many people are on. So peak hours of, you know, just after 5 o'clock and early in the morning, usually people see slower speeds, but it does give that experience data point, that kind of citizen data, into the Connect Maine Authority to weigh that against provider data. It also helps committees like this one identify areas that, you know, on the state map might say served, but you're clearly registering over and over again that you're unserved. So we do encourage people not just to take it once, but to take it multiple times, different days, different times of the day, and get your data on. You can go afterwards, and I can actually just put the direct link in. You can go and check out the map. You can zoom right in on Shabik, see, you know, where people are starting to collect their data and put it on there, and you can start to see your speeds. It'll take you to that map as soon as you do your speed test as well, but I can throw the direct link in here so people can check it out.
Thank you, Ken.
Yes, thank you. And Jim Van Fleet comes on and asks, is there a certain minimum of users to ensure no further tax rate implication? Michael?
Yeah. The first thing is that Axiom has guaranteed payment of the debt service regardless of the number of users. So that's an answer to half of the question. The other half is they would start to get uncomfortable if the number of users got down below 200, I would say. Is that fair, Mark? And I think it's very unlikely, given that they have 225, 30, 40, whatever users on the island now. And with the better speeds offered, I think it's, I can't imagine they won't pick up some other people who do not now have Axiom service. I guess, hope that answers the question.
Gary, did you have your hand up? No, okay. Well, I've reached the end of the questions that people have asked. And hang on, I just spoke way too soon. Chip, come on and join us.
Hi, Chip. I mean, just a quick jump in to thank you guys for all your hard work. I am really, really supportive of broadband and its ability to help us shape our future. Normally, when we look at these things, we say, what do I need? What do I need? You hear that said a lot. But I think it's more, what do we need? And the overall effect is, as previously was said, young families are the best way to keep Shabig, and they got to have this. So I'm all for it. Let's go.
Thank you, Chip. I agree. I absolutely agree.
And Jim is on now too, and I would like to ask Jim Van Fleet to chime in. You're right ahead.
You're muted, Jim.
Oh, there we go. I hope you can hear me now. I would second or third or fifth of the laudatory comments made by my neighbors and friends. This is superior work. The answers from a business perspective are really smart answers that everyone in our community can get behind easily. And if there are expenses that the town is uncomfortable with, I am just one of several board members of Recompense, but this is Recompense has already supported broadband access to some of our nonprofits. It's right in our wheelhouse to help. The community at large has been incredibly supportive and generous to Recompense, and we owe it to our community to help invest in those sorts of things. So, congratulations, everybody. You've done a phenomenal job. I'll try and get to the Wednesday meeting to say the same. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim. We will keep Recompense in mind because there may be let's say it's almost certain that there'll be something we haven't thought of, some little thing that will be a problem.
Jim, did you raise your hand again?
No.
Okay.
Hand down.
There we go. All right. Anybody else? I don't see any more questions either online or in the chat box. How about our committee members, Richard, Gary, Adam? You've all been relatively quiet tonight. And Hugh from the frozen north.
He's in Texas, I think.
Oh, well then, the sweltering south then.
Frozen Texas.
There was a point that we had discussed about making a fund available for those who were unable to afford it on their own. I don't remember, I don't think that was something that we required of Mark, but was there a separate fund for that? Where did we net out on that? Do you remember, Michael?
No, one of the difficulties with that is that the concession for the seasonal residents meant that the return to the town wouldn't be as large as it would have been if we didn't have that. Okay. But the now, if we have more than we expect, more subscribers than we expect, that's like some of the calculations will change, and maybe that's something we could discuss.
I'd like to mention, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Richard, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that in our discussions, we had found some other small communities like ours that through the generosity of some of the members of the community, these communities set up low cost or free broadband access to underprivileged people in the community. So it was but that was all just by the incentive of that community to do that. And there's nothing to say we couldn't do that here and have some sort of subsidized volunteer funding from the community to help promote this to everybody on the island, whether they can afford it or not.
That is true. And I raised the question with our pastor. Did she know of people who now do not have broadband or internet connection? Nobody has broadband. Do not have an internet connection because of costs. And I didn't want to know names. I just wanted to know if there were such people, and if so, get an idea how many. And she couldn't really give me an answer. So I think we would pursue those conversations, though. I would keep that line open. I see Donna has her hand up.
Yeah, Donna has her hand up.
Yeah, I thought I heard at the beginning of this meeting something about that people would pay, who were challenged financially, would be paying $20 a month.
Oh,
did I not hear that?
Donna, that's the seasonal rate in the off season for summer people.
Well, I guess I have a major concern about this, because this is one of the things, I do know people who are paying much less. I do know people who had kids who Axiom or Shebig.net, and I don't know if Axiom kept it up or not, but really helped people out. And I think that somehow that has to be built into this plan, because I mean, if I were a seasonal resident, and I'm gonna be perfectly blunt, and people probably are not gonna like to hear this, but if I can afford to have a place here on Shebig, and know that there might be people here who are challenged economically, who have little kids or need to do schoolwork, and that they're not going to be able to get a reduced rate, I would, if I were in that situation, I would be wanting to pay a little bit more to offset that. And so I'm just, I'm being perfectly blunt about how I feel that we need to take care of the people so that this really is broadband for all, because it's not that way right now, the way I'm looking at it. Thank you.
I agree, Donna, and a first way to start to answer that question is to try to quantify it. And we can't do that obviously tonight, but that might be a place, for example, where the Recompense Foundation could be helpful. Mm-hmm. That's a conversation we, to be honest, we haven't given that a lot of consideration. Partly because in my conversation with Melissa, I didn't get the sense that there was a lot of that sort of need, but we could certainly do it. And I would hate to think that there were people who were shut out of this because they really couldn't afford it.
I would just add, we're starting to try to model this with Georgetown. Some communities have tried to take a swing at affordability. Islesboro is one who had their own kind of model. Georgetown will probably be our first that has a dedicated fund that's either generated by town support or return from the project itself. And we're having a meeting in the next couple of weeks with Bain Community Foundation just to understand from their point of view the best pathways for a town to do that. So happy to share some of that modeling and what comes out of that meeting as well, so that the committee in town kind of knows where communities are heading with this. But affordability is definitely something that the state is probably going to have to take on in the next 1 to 2 years. The federal government just set standards around affordability with some of their emergency broadband benefits. They started out with $50 and then the next time around came down to $30. So it's something that states haven't had to tackle yet because they were waiting for someone to say what is affordable. And it's such a subjective number. But hopefully some of our communities will be able to identify that and Chibi will be able to learn and pull from their models and not necessarily have to be the first ones to go at it.
Good. Thank you. That's nice.
I have a comment from Toby Webb. I'd like to read. He says, "We have found the Samaritan Fund method to support heat and medicine needs. We can do the same for broadband." And Gary, I saw your hand up.
Yeah, I'd like to partly address what Don is saying. I think it's really important as a not year-round resident that residents on Chibig and kids have access, and there needs to be a mechanism to address that. But I think to put it in perspective, right now those kids aren't getting adequate service. So moving to fiber optic will move them well ahead, so long as we can figure out a way to help subsidize people who can't really afford it. And in addition to that, as a member of the committee, I think it's really important that we move ahead with this for Chibig as an ongoing island community. And I guess I would encourage everyone to contact the selectmen or the board of selectmen to encourage them to move ahead with the town meeting. Many of us on the committee aren't year-round residents, so we can't vote. So I think it's going to be really important to reach out to a lot of the year-round residents who really aren't represented here tonight and to try to get them to support and answer their questions as well.
Thank you, Gary. Okay, Donna's hands up again.
No, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I just feel like there needs to be an answer to that question, whether you create a Samaritan Fund or however you do it. Because I can give you an example of somebody I know who's on SSI, and there's absolutely no way that they would be able to pay for this. And they are a contributing member of this community and valued member of this community. And it's none of our business who needs help and who doesn't need help. But I mean, to me, the simplest way is to have a program where it can just be forgiven, and that the rest of us pay $5 more or $3 more or whatever. You know, if that's what we're talking about here, I think that we need to set it up so that in such a way, and I'm not saying hold up voting, I'm just saying this is an issue that needs to have a real answer.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. I don't have any problem with that. And we just need to quantify it a little bit and see what we're talking about. Yeah, Richard?
Oh, just to add to that, I mean, Donna, you mentioned one of the avenues, and that could be, I'm just pulling out ideas out, is if seasonal residents would trade in their $20 rate and continue to pay the full rate, but donate that extra money back into the fund to pay for these people on the island for the lower rate for people who qualify. That's just one avenue to do it. It could be on a voluntary basis, or that would be the easiest way to do it, is voluntary basis. And I bet there would be a a great response to it, given the proper embellishments of it.
I think year-round users would also be willing to contribute as well.
Yeah, right.
Sure. The Samaritan Fund has been mentioned as a mechanism. They might be also a source of a certain amount of quantification. And then, but yeah, I agree. That should be added as part of the ultimate plan of what we're going to charge people. But it's not that I really think it's not something that has to be settled before we start in with a project. That's all.
I see Mark has unmuted himself and maybe has a comment.
I'm only going to say the biggest barrier for everybody, including the less fortunate, is the upfront cost of getting fiber to the home. That is the largest cost for anybody. And the ongoing cost after that can be difficult. But the most important thing you want to say to community members, and this goes to Donna's point, is everybody who signs up gets a free installation. So you'll have fiber to your home. And then the question, and that might be, even then might be a barrier if they feel like they can't afford the cost of the monthly fee. So you just need to be very clear with people that we want you to sign up for service, because that gets you your free installation while construction is going on. And then secondly, after that, that we're working on a solution to try to have reduced costs for those who qualify, need it, whatever it might be. And I would only say one other point to that, which is ultimately in the second and third years, when those who are stragglers who haven't signed up for service, there also needs, that fund needs to fund partially at least the connection to the home. It is by far the largest cost to somebody. It could be $1,000 or more to connect somebody in year three, right? So you wanna think about that. This is not necessarily all about a $10 a month solution reduction to somebody's ongoing fiber cost, right, monthly fee. It might be quite a bit greater than that to get them hooked up initially. And by the way, this is very complicated, what we're talking about. It sounds very simple, and every single community that Kendra Jo goes to and that I go to talks about this. And there are challenges, trust me, to work this out. So it's good to talk about it, but to your point, Michael, if you need a solution before you have a solution, that's going to be very challenging, because you need input from everybody to make something work for your community that makes sense for your community. And every community in this matter, I always like to say every community is the same. In this case, every community is different. They have different sensibility, different thinking, different ways of approaching this, a lot of different moving parts here.
Further questions? David, did you see anybody else?
No, I don't see anybody else with burning issues at the moment.
Okay, then I would encourage people to encourage the selectmen to move this forward from Wednesday night, and so that we can start getting in line for some of this, start for construction and for our grant money.
And just, that's the bottom line. Just by point of information, the meeting on Wednesday night is on Zoom. It's not at the hall. So the same method you use to get onto this meeting can be used to get on the Board of Selectmen's meeting, which starts at 6 o'clock on this following Wednesday.
Right.
And I know we're starting to lose folks, but I'll take a moment to say thank you to Michael and David for carrying the pen and the sword to get us this far. So thank you both.
And we have one last hand up, I think. Betts, if you'd like to say something.
Betts, you're muted.
You got to unmute yourself.
Betts, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
actually, it was a mistake, but I would like to say I agree that there needs to be some kind of a community fund to help everybody have this service. It's just really, really important. And for some people, it's cost prohibitive. So I think we as a community can rally and figure out a way to handle this.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank everybody.
Yes, well, thank you all for coming or being there or being wherever you are, tuning in. And hope I'll see some of you Wednesday night. I'll be there.
Good night, all.
Good night. Thank you.